hair piles in the house.
She said her hair was just everywhere.
At Rough Greens, we know dogs need live nutrition just like we do.
We have had a lot of issues with her skin.
Sometimes itching and scratching, lack of energy, digestive issues, they're not medical issues at all, but more likely they're nutritional deficiencies from eating dead food.
A lot of the nutrients just aren't there anymore.
The good news is you don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Simply add a scoop of Rough Greens and make even the best dog food better.
I was truly amazed how fast it worked.
One of the most noticeable things is her coat doesn't have the itching.
She doesn't shed as much.
It wasn't even 2 weeks that I saw a drastic improvement.
We're so confident that your dog will love Rough Greens that we're going to let them try it before you buy it. Free. Just cover the shipping. Get your free bag of Rough Greens today at ruffgreens.com. That's ruffgreens.com.
I wish we would have found Rough Greens a lot sooner.
So good, your dog will ask for it by name.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. As always, I'm your host, Larry Lease. Today's episode, we continue our Halloween series with the murder of Bobby Miller. Before we do that, give me your thoughts and theories on this case in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive right in. Excuse me. Today we are discussing a case that just hit its 15th year anniversary. It's the case of Roberta, who went by Bobby Miller. She was a beautiful and vibrant woman who had her life cut short, leaving behind endless questions and a relentless pursuit for justice. She was the devoted mom, loyal friend, and a loved member of her community. In the wake of a nasty divorce that she had finally just gotten through, Bobby had started to rebuild her life. She moved into a new home, enrolled in college, and was embracing new opportunities. But unfortunately, on Halloween night in 2010, tragedy struck in Guilford, New Hampshire. Bobby was found brutally murdered in her own home alongside her dog, who suffered the same fate. The investigation that followed her death was filled with a lack of resources, missteps, finger pointing, and way more questions than answers. And so now, her case has joined over 130 other cold cases that are just sitting in boxes at the Attorney General's office right beside well-known names like Mara Murray. Bobby's brother Ken has since become a tireless advocate, demanding accountability and answers from investigators who are supposed to be bringing her justice. But despite the passing of 14 years, her family is still met with silence. And a very real possibility that her killer may never be brought to justice. Her case is a story of a stolen life and a system that has failed her and her family at every turn. One that we've unfortunately heard time and time again. So let's get into the details. Bobby Miller was born on September 25th, 1956, into an already bustling big family. She had four sisters and one brother. When she was just 7 years old, her family decided to move into the most idyllic farmhouse I've ever seen, on Amherst Street in the suburb of Bedford, New Hampshire, because they needed a little more wiggle room, and this was such an amazing place to raise kids. Bobby was able to help care for all the animals that they had, and she developed a love for the outdoors. She helped to raise chickens and pigs and ducks, but the ponies were always her favorite. And given the constant activity at the home, unsurprisingly, it became a magnet for all the kids' friends. Bobby, with her fearless spirit and hearty laugh, was always the center of the action. She was very charismatic and beautiful. She had a huge personality. Her list of hobbies and interests also made it really easy for her to have something in common with just about everyone. She loved to ride dirt bikes. She loved hiking and sailing, any sort of outdoor adventure, and she was all in. Being raised on a farm, she wasn't scared to get out there. She wasn't scared to get dirty. But she also had this beautiful and calm artistic side to her. She enjoyed writing and sewing, and she had a real knack for stained glass. She loved to create these intricate masterpieces for her family to give as gifts, and those are things that they are still able to treasure to this day. Little pieces of Bobby that she left behind. While growing up with that many siblings definitely had its challenges, at the end of the day, her siblings remember her as their protector. She was always ready to stand up for them, a wild child with a tough exterior over a heart of gold. Bobby also had a special place in her father's heart. She knew that he ran a tight ship, but she was the master at navigating the strict rules. Bobby leaned in on her charm. She was always this obedient daughter, following all the rules. She would come home 5 minutes before curfew, and from her dad's perspective, she was just the most ideal, well-behaved child. But while her dad wasn't watching, that rebellious streak of hers came through. Because the moment the lights went out, she was heading out of her window to continue her fun. Her teenage years were just a whirlwind of backroad drives with her brother, pushing the limits, and really embracing the freedom of youth. She genuinely did live every moment to the fullest. Bobby eventually went on to graduate from West High School in 1975 in Manchester, and that free spirit of hers swept her away from home right away. On a whim and with no plan whatsoever, she and her friend moved to Arizona. That was like the most Bobby thing for her to do. It seemed like she was never afraid to try anything, never afraid to take a risk, and had full confidence that she was capable of figuring things out along the way. And that's exactly what she did. After a year full of new adventures, Bobby came back home. She moved in with a few friends in the larger city of Manchester and took on waitressing jobs to get by. And this is where, this is where she ended up meeting Gary Miller. Gary was a year younger than her, and she was immediately impressed with his ambition. He was working as a bouncer in Manchester by night, and during the day, he was a hard-working mechanic. Gary was eager to start his life. He wanted to become a businessman. He had huge hopes and dreams. Bobby fell in love with him for it. By 1981, the two got married and decided to head out to the Midwest so that Gary could continue working on his dream. By 1984, they welcomed their first child, a daughter named Jennifer, and shortly after this, their son, Jonathan. With this growing family, they decided they wanted to head back to their roots. Gary and Bobby settled into a home at 82 Hands Hill Road in the quaint lake town of Wolfboro, New Hampshire. Their new home was only about an hour away from Bedford, so Bobby was still so close to her family, and they fell in love with this community. Gary successfully went on to open three businesses. He had two auto dealerships and a tire shop. I believe one of those businesses was actually across the border in Maine. Meanwhile, Bobby became a well-known figure in the community. Her days were filled with raising their children. That was her top priority. It was what she lived for. When she wasn't doing that, she was exploring the beauty of their town and lending a hand to everyone in need. She would do anything for anyone. Her daughter Jennifer said in an interview that there was one point where she came home and her bed was gone. Bobby was like, well, someone else needed it more. She knew they weren't hard on money and that she'd be able to provide whatever she needed for her family. So if someone else needed something more, without hesitation, she was going to give it. She drove her elderly neighbor to church every single Sunday like clockwork. She had a list of driveways to shovel when it snowed for those who couldn't. It seemed like her kindness and her generosity really knew no limits. When their kids finished up high school and were moving on to bigger things, she decided to start taking on jobs. She worked at a local hardware store to stay busy, and I think there was one other place that she may have worked a little further down the road. But behind closed doors, her life was starting to fall apart. It looked idyllic and beautiful from the outside, but there were cracks under the surface. Gary's businesses had created ever-growing pressure, and the challenges of that, along with a long-term marriage and the shifting dynamics after the kids had moved out, started to create a wedge between the couple. And in June of 2007, after 26 years of marriage, the couple decided to separate. Bobby's family said that they were shocked when they heard the news because to them, Bobby and Gary's relationship seemed unbreakable. Gary was always well-loved by Bobby's family, and it was the same the other way around. But time had taken its toll, and it seemed there really was no saving it. By September of 2007, Bobby filed for divorce, and according to those that knew them best, the divorce was far from pretty. The complications of figuring out what to do with several businesses, not just their main home, but also a cabin in Maine, created a lot of challenges and disagreements. I can't imagine that it's easy to financially and emotionally liquidate a 26-year marriage, and I feel like when you go through any sort of legal process, even if you have the strongest bond with someone, it is bound to start to tear things apart at some point. So after 3 long years of mediation and back and forth on August 13th, 2010, their divorce was finalized. Bobby had received their home in Wolfboro, and Gary received a cabin in Acton, Maine, as per the agreement. Bobby was supposed to sell their family home, and Gary was supposed to sell his two remaining businesses. The assets would be split 50-50. It was a pretty clean agreement. At this point, Bobby was determined to forge a new path for herself. It had been years of trying to navigate this divorce. I'm sure it just made whatever feelings they had that caused their marriage to split become even worse. So she really just wanted to wash her hands of it, wanted to move on. Just days after the divorce was finalized, she bought a house. She moved into a charming little ranch house in Guilford, New Hampshire, cute little lake town on the shores of I'm going to butcher this name, Lake Winnipesaukee. She also decided to enroll in Granite State College to study business. Because at this point, her whole life had been dedicated to being a wife and a mother, and now she had to have some way to support herself. And like I said, she wasn't scared to try anything. She wanted to go and get a business degree. She was embracing a new life, a new adventure, filled with unknowns. She also adopted a golden lab to keep her company, and she frequently spent time with her son Jonathan, who lived in Guilford as well. This transition seemed to be a very good one for her. The following month, on September 5th, 2010, Bobby was celebrating her 54th birthday. She decided to throw a party at her new home. She welcomed friends and family, and they were going to celebrate not just her birthday, but this new house and this new chapter of her life. But just a month after that, and only 2 months after the divorce was finalized, and she bought her new home, on Halloween night of 2010, this new life was stolen from her. Bobby had spent the entire weekend enjoying those around her. On Friday night, October 29th, she went out on a date, and on Saturday, October 30th, she decided to go to dinner with her friend named Diane. This was someone that she had actually met through the business program at Granite State. The two of them went to O's Steak and Seafood before heading back to Bobby's home to watch a movie. Diane left around 1 a.m., and Bobby called it a night. The following day, October 31st, the day it's believed she was murdered, she spoke to both of her kids and her mom on the phone. She seemed to be in great spirits. She didn't have any plans for that night. Her neighborhood in general wasn't one to celebrate Halloween, so she didn't expect or plan to get any trick-or-treaters. It was just going to be a mellow day. She had a paper to turn in at midnight, planned to spend the rest of the day building window boxes for her new home. She also spoke to everyone excitedly about how she was working on her plans to turn her garage into a stained glass studio. By 5 p.m. that night, Bobby made a quick trip to the local Lowe's about 5 miles away, where she was captured on surveillance footage. Little did anyone know, this would be the last known image of Bobby alive. Everything from this point on is still a mystery, even all these years later. The following day, on November 1st, 2010, a distressing call came in at Guilford 911 around 4 or 4:30 p.m. It was Jonathan Miller, and he had just found his mom and her beloved dog dead in the kitchen of her home. Police swarmed the quiet neighborhood, ultimately shutting down the road due to all the activity. Right away, the scene painted a very grim picture. Bobby had been shot twice, with all of all things, a shotgun, once in the face, then again in the back of the head. Her dog had tragically suffered the exact same fate. The brutality of this attack suggested that this was something personal. Being shot with a shotgun is horrific. It does unimaginable damage. There is no question that the first shot killed her, so why would someone shoot her a second time unless it was purely out of rage? And the same thing with a dog. Why kill the dog? While Jonathan was speaking to police and they were trying to navigate how any of this could have happened to Bobby, her daughter Jennifer was notified of her mother's death as well. Being states away in California, she started her race to get to her mom and her race for answers. But unfortunately, Bobby's mom and the rest of her family wouldn't find out about her death until the following morning. And the way they found out about it is so disappointing. They found out through the news. Bobby's mother, Malene, felt her heart sink that morning of November 2nd as she watched a newscaster speak about a woman and a dog brutally murdered in the area where her daughter lived. And even without the name being released, she just knew. She knew that was Bobby, and that something awful had happened. Imagine you lose your daughter to murder, and you find out on TV. The investigation got off to a very slow start. The local police were allegedly stretched thin at this point with another shooting that had occurred nearby. There was also a higher profile case that required several officers to spend their time testifying in court. So there wasn't a lot of manpower to dedicate to Bobby's case. Even with the state police major crimes unit being brought in, there really wasn't much movement. Country Club Road, the road she lived off of, remained closed for almost a week, and reporters, when they tried to figure out what was going on, were met with absolute silence from authorities. As you can imagine, this caused the public to panic. Even some local government officials were apparently kept in the dark about what was going on. It led to some of them coming together to write a strong letter demanding answers from local authorities. It was really a scary situation, and it was even worse almost because at this point police had released that it was a suspicious death, so people knew something was up, but they got nothing afterward. No reassuring press conference, no details, nothing. Back at Bobby's home, where they were slowly chipping away at the investigation, they found that there were no signs of forced entry, which added to the theory that this was something personal. Bobby had either let someone in, or someone had a key and let themselves in. However, it wasn't possible to completely rule out whether maybe Bobby had just left her doors unlocked and a stranger jumped on an opportunity, but with all the other information, the way that she was murdered, it just didn't seem like that was the most likely scenario. There also was no sign that this was a robbery gone wrong. In fact, they found over $20,000 in cash and checks inside Bobby's home, and none of it had been taken. All her personal and valuable belongings were still there, untouched. Also, something very strange, at least in my opinion, was that neither of the two neighbors that lived less than 200 feet away heard the four gunshots. And not just regular gunshots, but shotgun blasts ring out that night, and nobody saw any strange activity. The more that was uncovered, the more it seemed like this was a very deliberate, planned, and targeted attack. With this information, authorities were able to calm the public. They gave them the bare minimum to make sure they knew they weren't at risk of being attacked by a serial killer or someone running around the community. But this brought no relief to Bobby's family. Investigators at this point started to question those who knew Bobby, trying to put together a timeline and figure out who may have wanted to harm her. It wasn't even until a year later that they publicly announced that they believed she was murdered sometime between 4 p.m. on Halloween and 4 p.m. on November 1st. And honestly, I have no idea why it took them that long to release that critical information. From the information I told you earlier, you know she was with a friend Saturday night until 1 a.m. She spoke to numerous family members on Sunday. She was seen on surveillance footage Sunday afternoon. She never turned in her paper that was due at midnight. I feel like they had plenty of information suggesting that she was murdered sometime that night. So why did it take them a year to confirm that to the public? When you're relying on tips and you're wanting people to remember a specific time frame, information like that being released really matters. As they continue their investigation, pretty quickly focused on one specific person that I'm sure you're already assuming, and that's Gary. It wasn't necessarily odd that authorities decided to focus on Gary first. Not only is it statistically more likely that a partner or family member is involved in a homicide, but Gary and Bobby had just come out of a very contentious divorce, and as of a week or two before her murder, more problems were rising to the surface. They thought they had come out of the woods and were ready to go their separate ways, but it was just more of a mess. Gary had filed a motion against Bobby, claiming that she was not upholding the agreement agreed upon divorce proceedings. Bobby, as mentioned earlier, had been given their home in Wolfboro, and the agreement was that she would sell it and split the proceeds 50-50 with Gary. But she hadn't done that yet. Excuse me. The real issue here, however, seemed to be about taxes. The couple had filed jointly in 2009. Bobby failed to pay her share. After added fees, the total was nearing $70,000. Gary and his attorney accused Bobby of purposely failing to pay in order to emotionally and financially ruin Gary. They claimed she should have the money to pay because over the course of the divorce proceedings, she had been paid out nearly $1 million. So in their eyes, she either had the money and was refusing to pay, which would support the idea she was trying to destroy him, or she had squandered it all away. Bobby, however, said she simply didn't have the money. She hadn't squandered it, she'd used it. She owed over $100,000 in legal fees, was still paying living expenses, hadn't had an income, was paying for college, and still helping to pay for business expenses. She had so much money going out and nothing coming in. So it's fair to assume both of them were incredibly angry and frustrated by this point. Neither wanted to go through another legal battle, but the hearing for this new motion was set for the first week of November, and she just so happened to be killed the weekend before. When authorities interviewed Bobby's family, they asked her if they believed Gary could be involved. Everyone, except for their daughter Jennifer, apparently claimed they believed it was possible. Bobby's mother told authorities that she had been fearful of Gary, and there was actually an email found that Bobby had sent to Gary just 2 days before her murder that supported this fear. In the email, Bobby called him out on his manipulation, saying that he was filled with a bottomless hate and that she was terrified of what he might do to ruin her life. And on that same day, Friday, October 29th, a very coincidental incident occurred. Their cabin in Acton, Maine, which now belonged to Gary, burned to the ground. A neighbor reported seeing Gary and his new wife leaving the cabin earlier that day. Around 9:30 p.m., he noticed a flickering light over on Gary's property, which, while standing at his grill, and right away he knew it looked like a fire. He tried calling 911 but had no cell service, so he ran to a neighbor's house, and they were able to call the fire department. It took 6 hours to get the fire under control. The cabin had a propane heater, and in order to prevent combustion, which could have exploded the entire house, a vent had been left open to release propane in a controlled way. This meant firefighters couldn't get close for hours. There was just too much risk. By morning, the cabin was a complete loss. A fire investigator came. The fire marshal quickly determined that it had been arson. Someone had poured gasoline all over the front porch and lit it on fire. At this point, nobody was even sure whether Bobby had been made aware of the fire before her death. Several family members had discussed not telling her to avoid adding stress. So now there were dozens of reasons Gary might have wanted to harm Bobby.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hair piles in the house.
She said her hair was just everywhere.
At Rough Greens, we know dogs need live nutrition just like we do.
We have had a lot of issues with her skin.
Sometimes itching and scratching, lack of energy, digestive issues, they're not medical issues at all, but more likely they're nutritional deficiencies from eating dead food.
A lot of the nutrients just aren't there anymore.
The good news is you don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Simply add a scoop of Rough Greens and make even the best dog food better.
I was truly amazed how fast it worked.
One of the most noticeable things is her coat doesn't have the itching.
He doesn't shed as much.
It wasn't even 2 weeks that I saw a drastic improvement.
We're so confident that your dog will love Rough Greens that we're going to let him try it before you buy it. Free. Just cover the shipping. Get your free bag of Rough Greens today at ruffgreens.com. That's ruffgreens.com.
I wish we would have found Rough Greens a lot sooner.
So good, your dog will ask for it by name.
Somebody's question, did that angry email from Bobby lead him to believe that she burned his cabin down? Was it retaliation? Or was the email itself enough to set him off? Some family members also said Gary had been violent in the past. Maybe not directly physical towards Bobby, but he'd allegedly punched holes in walls, among other things. There was more. Maybe he was worried that he'd have to come up with that $70,000. Maybe he couldn't deal with what she had said in the email. The list of possibilities was endless, so Gary was brought in. He remained cooperative with police. He provided an alibi. He was with his new wife, and they confirmed that he was far away from Guilford when it happened. He never obtained a lawyer or acted in a way that would suggest guilt. Now, as a quick side note, I really don't like the rhetoric that not getting a lawyer equals innocence. That's a belief I used to hold, but I've since learned how messed up that thinking is. Getting a lawyer doesn't point to guilt. It means you know how to protect yourself in a flawed legal system. If you're ever being questioned by police, always get a lawyer, no matter what. You're not guilty for protecting yourself. Anyway, that aside, Gary also agreed to take a polygraph. The results were never publicly released, which, shocker, I know, but based on the way authorities behaved afterwards, it seemed he likely passed, because their attention shifted elsewhere. In the coming months, police remained tight-lipped, leaving Bobby's family with a growing and understandable frustration. They wouldn't communicate what evidence had been found, the results of forensic testing, or who was a possible suspect. They left the family completely in dark. They didn't say whether they thought the arson was connected to Bobby's death. Not a single detail was shared. Everything was hidden under the excuse of an ongoing investigation. And I completely understand that some things have to be protected. I really do. But when you protect everything, when you're giving families nothing, you're creating a new problem. You're creating a space for confusion and speculation. And the families are forced to fill in the blanks themselves. So for all anyone to know at this point, there could have been a disgruntled employee, a businessman Gary wronged, or maybe the arson and the murder were someone's way of getting back at both of them. Bobby had also started dating again, so had one of the men she met had bad intentions, and everything else was just a coincidence. Authorities had even shown one of her family members a photo of an unknown man that they believed might be connected to the case. But to this day, they have never mentioned this person again. Just one more mystery. They really were left to mass speculation. And I talk about this all the time. The more details you release, the more you might answer questions and rule out possibilities. The public's going to speculate no matter what. But the families? They're also wondering the exact same things, if not more. And that's a horrible way to live. There were just so many questions, and nobody was helping answer them. Then, 6 months into the investigation, things took a very unexpected turn. Authorities announced that they had received tips from 2 or 3 people that had sparked new interviews and investigative pathways. But they didn't elaborate on what those tips were. At the same time, Bobby's family, who was forced to essentially investigate on their own, decided to put up a $50,000 reward. Gary was actually working very closely with Bobby's family at this point. He helped put up posters and billboards, trying to push for answers. Now that the focus was off of him, they hoped this would get someone to come forward. Because unfortunately, it takes public interest to bring in tips. And when police release nothing, the media doesn't report, which means public interest dies. And with it, all possible leads. So a massive effort began to put up posters about the reward, and Ken, Bobby's brother, began to notice that some of them were being taken down. And not just occasionally, like kids messing around. This was purposeful. So Ken decided to put up more posters and a camera. He picked one of the main locations where posters kept disappearing and attached a camera to the base of a tree. The camera was set to send pictures to Ken's photo anytime someone approached it. Because honestly, the only people who benefit from taking those signs down would be someone who didn't want Bobby's case solved. A few days later, the camera stopped sending pictures. Ken thought maybe the batteries died, so he went out to check, and what he found was far worse. The batteries weren't dead. Someone had tried to destroy the camera. And that wasn't even the worst part. Leaning against a tree, right where the camera had been, was a large plywood sign. In huge letters, it said, "Fuck Kenny." This wasn't just some random stranger. This was personal. And it matched the growing belief that whoever killed Bobby knew her personally. Thankfully, while the antenna on the camera had been smashed, the camera itself was still functioning. It had been sending images to Ken's phone, but it had still been taking them and saving them internally. So Ken checked the memory card, and in the photos, there were three pictures of something unbelievable. It showed Bobby's son, Jonathan, approaching the camera. He was holding a rock in one hand, and in the other hand, the same F. Kenny sign that had been left behind. It was Jonathan, so as it turns out, suspicion had already been placed on Jonathan for some time. Just like Gary, he was close to Bobby, and the police had looked into him as a routine, especially since he was the first to find the body. That's not unusual. Anyone close to the victim, especially the person who discovers the crime scene, is going to be vetted. But according to the family, Jonathan did not handle this well. He immediately lawyered up, refused to answer questions, and refused a polygraph. He completely shut down. And his family found that extremely suspicious. When you pair that behavior with some of his history, they had even more reason to be concerned. Jonathan had a long criminal history. He had always struggled with behavior. According to Ken, their mother always came to his defense, always protected him. But Jonathan allegedly stole from almost everyone, friends, family, his own parents. He would go to his dad's dealership and steal cars. He even broke into his mom's place of work. He had stolen his safe, and when he couldn't open it, he threw it in a river. In 2007, around the time that his parents separated, he was charged with felony burglary. It appears his parents, despite having the money to help him, didn't bail him out, and some believe that this may have caused him to start harboring resentment, either towards one or both of them. Around that time, Jonathan also filed a restraining order against his father. So there was clearly tension. Jennifer and Jonathan, the siblings, also hadn't spoken for years, even before the divorce. No one really knows why, but behind the scenes, this family was fractured. At this point, Jonathan pretty much only had his mom, and yet, despite that, his family believed there was reason to suspect he may have wanted to harm her. They've not been clear about why, but police agreed. In September 2011, almost a year after the murder, state police obtained a search warrant for both Jonathan's home and car in relation to Bobby's murder. And it wasn't just any search. It was executed during a traffic stop. So whether that was just coincidence or they were tailing him, it clearly showed they were serious. The results of the search was never officially shared, but we do know one thing leaked out. Jonathan, a convicted felon, was found to be in possession of a gun, along with magazines and ammunition. Because he was a felon, this was illegal. So he was arrested and thrown in jail. After Jonathan was released from jail, things got even stranger. For some reason, he showed up at his dad's cabin, the one in Acton, Maine. Now it's unclear whether he and Gary were on good terms at that point, but it seems unlikely. Gary was uncomfortable enough with Jonathan's presence, and so was Ken, that they spoke about it and decided to call and report him, because by going to the cabin, Jonathan had violated the terms of his release by crossing state lines. So, for the second time, Jonathan was put in jail. And this time, when he was released, he was given an ankle monitor. Still, even with that monitor, Jonathan continued to act out. Around the anniversary of Bobby's death, he was caught for reckless driving. Then a family member came forward with something disturbing that Jonathan had allegedly said in the days following Bobby's murder. He told them that he was supposed to visit his mom on Halloween, the same day it's believed she was killed. He claimed that he had told her he'd bring her some screws, but he said he fell asleep and never went. However, he added something strange. His friend ended up taking the screws to Bobby instead. That whole story just Doesn't make sense. If Jonathan fell asleep, how would this random friend know about the errand? Let's say he woke up and realized he forgot. Why would he ask a friend to go do it instead of just doing it himself? Let's say he didn't wake up. What friend would magically know he had an errand and decide, oh, I'll go deliver the screws to his mom? No matter how you twist it, the story seems fishy. And the family doesn't even know whether Jonathan told police about this friend. They don't know if police tracked the friend down or if the friend was real. But that could be a huge lead. This friend could have been the last person to see Bobby alive. How did she seem? Was there anyone else there? Was something off? Did they notice anything in the neighborhood? So either it was an important clue, or it was a lie. And if it was a lie, why lie about it? Could this all just be grief? Could Jonathan's erratic behavior be a result of trauma? Possibly, but there was enough doubt that Gary and Ken decided to hire an attorney and begin the process of filing a wrongful death suit against Jonathan in regard to Bobby's murder. Now, they haven't shared every detail about why, but one major reason was in hopes of getting access to the case files through discovery. Because if the legal system wasn't going to give them answers, maybe civil court would. But unfortunately, they hit another legal brick wall, something called the Murray exemption. Many of you probably know the case of Maura Murray, another high-profile New Hampshire case. Her family once sued to have her case files released to try to get movement in her case. They lost. In response, New Hampshire passed legislation which allows law enforcement to refuse to release case files under the Right to Know Act if the case is considered ongoing. Even if it's been decades, even if nothing is happening. So while some argue that the exemption is necessary to protect investigations, many, including Ken and Bobby's family, see it as a loophole to avoid accountability. Because in this case, the investigation wasn't moving, no updates were being given, and everything, including Bobby's murder, was being treated as an active case just to keep the files sealed. So because of the Murray exemption and likely other reasons, Bobby's family decided not to pursue the wrongful death suit. And just like that, they were back to square one. As the years continued to pass, communication with the Attorney General's office, which was now in charge of the cold case, was non-existent. So the family had to continue relying on their own efforts to get answers. For instance, while over $20,000 was found in Bobby's home, her family believed she had more money in a safety deposit box at the bank. But when they checked, it was empty. That raised a whole new set of questions. Did the killer know about the box, but not the money in the house? Did they go to the wrong place, assuming that's where her money would be? This made the attack seem even more targeted and planned, like someone with inside knowledge. Later, Bobby's attorney came forward and said that just a week before her death, Bobby had rewritten her will. There was also claims that she had been planning to increase her life insurance policy to $1 million, but never made it to the appointment. She had just placed the Wolfboro home in a trust only 2 or 3 days before her death. Now, this could all just be a sign that she was trying to tie up loose ends after the divorce. Maybe Gary had put pressure on her and she was getting her financial house in order. But to some, it seemed like an indicator that maybe she was scared something was about to happen to her. Then, 2 years after the murder, there was a development that felt huge, but also left people even more frustrated. The new owners of Bobby's home found a shotgun shell in the yard. Authorities did retrieve it and even conducted another search of the area. But how was that shell left behind? Shotguns are incredibly loud and cause massive damage. That's one of the reasons they're not typically used in murders. But there is one big reason someone would use a shotgun. They're untraceable. Unlike handguns or rifles, you can't do traditional ballistics on shotgun shells. The barrels are smooth, so they don't leave identifiable grooves. There's some debate about whether the firing pin or ejector leaves a mark, but even then, it's not enough to trace to a specific weapon. So this shell they found in the yard was likely useless for forensics. But it still raised questions. If Bobby and the dog were both shot inside, how did the shell end up outside? Did the killer pick up the shells, drop one outside, and miss it? Was there ever a fingerprint on it, now long gone due to years of exposure? It made Bobby's brother Ken return to a theory he had immediately after her death. This may have been a hit. From the beginning, Ken believed that someone hired someone to kill Bobby. At first, he speculated Gary, but it could have been anyone. There were two exact shots. A shotgun was used, no forced entry, no robbery. The house was clean. It all felt deliberate. So who could have done it? A business enemy? Someone connected to Gary? Someone who also tried to get Gary and failed, so instead burned his house down? Theories began to spiral, and all the while, Bobby's case sat unsolved. Years continued to pass. Bobby's family, including Gary, continued to fight for justice. They took her favorite hike up Mount Major and scattered her ashes. Every year on her birthday, they remembered her by making her favorite soup, which they now lovingly call Bobby's Soup. They even increased the reward for information to $55,000 and have repeatedly put up billboards, hoping someone will finally come forward with a tip. It's been nearly 7 years since Jennifer Miller got the call that her mother was dead, murdered in her own home on Halloween, and the pain is still fresh. Ken, Bobby's brother, has consistently been the one to spearhead efforts. He's rallied alongside dozens of other families, demanding the Attorney General's office, now in charge of all these cold cases, do something, anything. He's pushed for accountability, communication, transparency, resources for family who've been left in the dark. But it seems Ken and these families are still met with empty promises, unanswered calls, and ignored emails. When watching news coverage and interviews with these families, it's clear the Attorney General has failed to be present. He doesn't show up to events, doesn't engage with the families, and instead only makes controlled statements after the fact, downplaying what families are saying they're experiencing. For context, from 2015 to 2023, the Attorney General's office did not have a cold case prosecutor. That's 8 years. Ken had to publicly stand up in a government meeting in 2018 and say, quote, "You've not had a cold case prosecutor for 3 years. The AG's office acknowledged the problem and said they were working on it, but it still took until 2023 to finally fill that position. Some families in New Hampshire were never even given a victim's advocate. And those who did... Ken said his family was one of the lucky ones to get an advocate. That person was either non-responsive or simply told them, there's nothing new, and ended emails with tone-deaf remarks like, hope you're having a great summer, as if they weren't living through a decades-long nightmare. Ken believes that instead of being there for victims' families, the advocates are acting as a buffer for the AG's office, to shield them from facing hard questions or accountability. If there was ever a collection of cases to highlight how poorly victims' families are treated after a murder goes cold, this is it. How long can law enforcement get away with hiding behind ongoing investigation excuses? How is it acceptable to say that after 10, 20, 30 years with zero movement? These families aren't asking for the world. They're asking for answers, for truth, for basic communication. In 2023, Ken joined a protest outside the Attorney General's office. He was standing next to Julie Murray, sister of Mara Murray, a victim of an uncaught serial killer whose case had sat untouched for 30-plus years. Dozens of other families all asking the same thing. Do your job. They weren't just there for Bobby. They were there for everyone who's been forgotten, ignored, or brushed aside by a system that's supposed to protect them. Bobby deserves so much more than what she has received. Her family deserves more. Her mother, now in her 90s, still wakes up every day hoping for answers and to see the person responsible finally go to prison. Bobby's case is a clear reminder of something we talk about a lot. Law enforcement keeps everything a secret in a cold case. They leave too much room for speculation. That's exactly what happened here. Not only did they lose Bobby, but now the family has been torn apart. Mistrust, suspicion, and heartbreak have fractured what once was a close family. All because no one is giving them answers. Bobby had the heartiest laugh. She laughed all the time. Her siblings, Mickey and Ken, say the most important thing in the world to her is being a mom. For the past 12-plus years, Bobby's family has been navigating a nightmare. Still grieving for her loss, still looking for clues, still trying to find their way through a case that, with no leads or suspects, has officially gone cold. The Attorney General's office was helpful at first, but as time went on, the connection completely unraveled. Emails and questions were met with the same copy and paste response. We have to protect the investigation. The family is frustrated by the lack of information and the lack of movement. Do we think it could be solved? Absolutely. Do we think it will be solved? Not unless something changes. We have to do better, not just for the victims of true crime, but for the families that are left behind, who are also victims, who are still living in the aftermath of these tragedies. We have to hold law enforcement and government agencies accountable to make sure that something is being done, that someone is fighting for these forgotten lives. It's easy to forget that with every murder victim, there's a whole circle of other victims, family, friends, children, who are left behind to suffer in silence. In my opinion, this case should have been solvable. Bobby seemed like such an incredible person. She made an impact on everyone she came in contact with. From the moment she was born, she radiated energy, positivity, adventure. She was the kind of person who loved life, and she never put a time limit on herself. It's heartbreaking that someone like that, who's so rare, was taken from this earth. And what's worse, the person responsible is still out there, likely watching and getting away with it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to Bobby's story. Give me your thoughts and comments in the comment section below. Give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Of course, today's sponsor is NordVPN. Check the link out in the description today for 77% off and 3 extra free months. Check them out today with the link in the description. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Hair piles in the house.
She shed. Her hair was just everywhere.
At Rough Greens, we know dogs need live nutrition just like we do.
We have had a lot of issues with her skin.
Sometimes itching and scratching, lack of energy, digestive issues, they're not medical issues at all, but more likely they're nutritional deficiencies from eating dead food.
A lot of the nutrients just aren't there anymore.
The good news is you don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Simply add a scoop of Rough Greens and make even the best dog food better.
I was truly amazed how fast it worked.
One of the most noticeable things is her coat doesn't have the itching.
It doesn't shed as much.
It wasn't even 2 weeks that I saw a drastic improvement.
We're so confident that your dog will love Rough Greens that we're going to let them try it before you buy it. Free. Just cover the shipping. Get your free bag of Rough Greens today at ruffgreens.com. That's ruffgreens.com.
I wish we would have found Rough Greens a lot sooner.
So good, your dog will ask for it by name.
This holiday season, give the gift that everyone actually wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. From USDA-certified very tender filet mignons and perfectly aged ribeyes to juicy burgers and gourmet sides and desserts that make every meal unforgettable, Omaha Steaks brings steakhouse-quality flavor straight to your doorstep. Whether you're gifting family across the country or filling your own freezer, every box arrives perfectly packaged and guaranteed to impress. Because nothing says I love you most like a gift of Omaha Steaks. Skip the malls and the guessing. Go to omahasteaks.com right now. That's omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, this deal won't last. Omaha Steaks, delivering joy since 1917. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.